Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt. Mr. Speaker, excused, Flores, Greenlick, Hannah, Minnis, Patty Smith, Thatcher.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Vicki Berger.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony this morning will be a moment of silence. Courtesies. Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this morning I'd like to introduce a very special guest who's helping me in my office today. This is Cecilia Margaret Patton. She's up in the front this morning where the honorary pages usually sit. She's 9 years old. She attends Raleigh Park Elementary School. She's a constituent of Representative Reed's, and she is the daughter of my legislative aide, Laura Terrell Patton. Cecilia enjoys spending time with her family, riding horses, singing, acting, participating in Campfire Girls. She recently appeared in a PBS documentary about the Oregon Zoo, so watch for her on TV starting in the fall. Cecilia hopes to attend college in Hawaii so she can surf. Please join me in making her feel welcome today at the Capitol. Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to extend courtesies to the House. If you want to stand up and come up to the bar, We have some visitors from Clackamas County today. On your right is Chris Didway, the mom, and Grace Didway, who's a student at my daughter's school, Jennings Lodge School. And to the left is Renee Winjum and her son Christopher. And being very shy and retiring behind them is retired state senator, my constituent, Vern Duncan.
It's great to have all of you here. Welcome. Further courtesies. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to pass Senate Bills 819, 443, 460, 1049, 21, House Bill 2187, 2051, 3188, 2022, adopted HJM 12, passed the following House Bills as amended by the Senate, House Bills 2242, 2386, concurred in House Amendments 3, passed Senate Bills 613. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President from the Senate to pass House Bills 2230, 2234, 2241, 2713, 2799, 2895, 3013, 2446, 2168, 2486, 2617, 2853, 3092, 3104, 3377, 3436, 3486, 3541, adopted HJM 3, passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House bills 2184, 2665, 2666, 3466, 2821, 3178, 3328. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate bills 131, 208, 209, 620, 625, 889, House Bills 5042, 5050, 5051, 2066, 2101, 2240, 2273, 2579, 2675, HCR 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, 12, HGM 5 and 10. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President for the assigned Senate Bill 216.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the bill.
HCR 6, commemorating the outstanding athletic and community achievement of the 2006 Murray Hill Little League All-Stars.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Concurrent Resolution 6A. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm sure you'll remember last summer an outstanding group of young men who impressed us, captured our attention, our imagination, and our hearts. As a state, I think we joined together to root them on as they continued their journey to the Little League World Series. I'd like to introduce you to the Murray Hill Little League All-Stars. Last summer, coached by Ron Poole and managed by Jeff Keller, the team glided undefeated through the state tournament to become the first team to capture four consecutive state titles. Beating teams from Idaho, Alaska, Montana, and Wyoming, the Murray Hill Little League All-Stars won the Northwest Regional Competition and became the first team from Oregon to qualify for the Little League World Series in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, since 1958. After a disappointing first-round loss, the team showed great determination, courage, and guts, bouncing back to win three consecutive games and reaching the U.S. title game. Ultimately, they earned a third-place finish in the Little League World Series. Now, Gandhi once said, "Satisfaction lies in the effort, not in attainment. Full effort is full victory." This team should be completely satisfied because they showed great effort and dedication in achieving their victories. I have the distinct pleasure of representing many of these outstanding young men, their coaches, and their families. With us today in the side aisle and joined by their families in the upper gallery are Sam Albert, and guys, if you wouldn't mind standing up as I call your names, Sam Albert, Evan DeJardin, Brian Damagala, Jace Fry, Derek Keller, Perry Lampman, Toma Matisoff, Trevor Nix, Austin Perry, Corey Poole, Alec Powell, and Miguel Rivera. I ask you to join me in honoring their accomplishments by adopting House Concurrent Resolution 6. And while we recognize their success on the baseball diamond, let's not forget this group is part of the future of our state. A prominent American once said, creativity is constantly in danger of being destroyed by success. The more effectively the environment is mastered, the greater the temptation to rest on one's oars. These young men have tasted athletic success and realized the value of hard work, but I'm convinced by their character that they will not rest on their oars. And I'm sure you'll all join me in encouraging them to continue doing great things athletically, academically, and in their communities. During their run to the World Series, the team endured rigorous practice schedules and missed school days. And despite the obstacles, I want you to know that these are all-star citizens as well. 10 players excel in 5 other sports. 4 are honor roll students. 2 are closely tied with their churches. And all of them enjoy close relationships with their families. Friends, if we need inspiration as we move closer to the conclusion of this legislative session, we need look no further than Murray Hill. This group should be an example for us, putting team before individual and working creatively and collaboratively for the greater good. To all of you, Sam, Devin, Brian, Jace, Derek, Perry, Toma, Trevor, Austin, Corey, Alec, Miguel, and Jeff, congratulations, thank you, and keep it up. Please join me in congratulating the Murray Hill Little League All-Stars for their successes on and off the diamond and thanking them for their example. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to thank the representative from Beaverton for bringing this concurrent resolution to the floor. I'm honored to have 3 of the young men live in my district, House District 35, Sam Albert, Brian Domagala, and Trevor Nix. Trevor and Brian are honor roll students. Sam's active in his community. He's going to be a soccer referee, and he enjoys music, and I think it's a great thing and a great testament. And I'm sure the young men will appreciate that when I get bored here, I have a baseball on my desk, and so you can do more than you can play baseball, and you can be a legislator, and you can snowboard and do all these great things. But you guys are very inspirational, and congratulations again, and thank you for showing up, and congratulations to the parents and the coaches. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Reed, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to thank the players and their families for being here and providing a good example of how to work together to do great things.
Those who are of the opinion that House Concurrent Resolution 6A should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin votes aye. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Crummell votes aye. Representative McPherson votes aye. House Concurrent Resolution 6A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. It is a delight to have all of you here. We celebrated with you in your accomplishments. Thank you so much for excelling at the sport of baseball, but also excelling as young citizens. We look forward to tracking you all down the road. Welcome to the Capitol. Propositions and motions. Chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Joint Memorial 8 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Wednesday, June 6, 2007 calendar. Is there an objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative McPherson.
Mr. Speaker, I move adoption of the committee report on Senate Bill 257.
Representative McPherson moves adoption of the committee report on Senate Bill 257. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 257 adds the words variable annuity to the definition of security under the Oregon securities laws. A variable annuity is a product offered by insurance companies. In exchange for a premium, usually paid in a lump sum, the insurance company pays the buyer an income for life. But unlike the traditional fixed annuity, a variable annuity pays an amount that varies depending on the investment return earned by the insurance company on the invested premium, which is usually placed in one or more mutual funds. The variable annuity combines the guarantee of an income for life with the opportunity to enhance that income with a good investment return. Because it includes an investment feature, the Securities and Exchange Commission regulates variable annuities as securities under federal law. But Oregon law does not. They are regarded only as a form of insurance. Senate Bill 257 would change that. It would recognize under state law what the federal government already recognizes, that including the risk of extra profit or of unexpected loss in the amount of income the annuity buyer receives makes it an investment. As securities, variable annuities would be subject to the protections for consumers that apply to other investment products, protections requiring written disclosure of the risks involved, for example. Authority of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to regulate how the variable annuity is presented to the public, and the right of a buyer who is harmed in the way the variable annuity is sold to recover losses. I want to make something very clear. Variable annuities are a good and useful product. The insurance companies that issue them are responding to a need. There are buyers who want the security of a lifetime income so they don't outlive their assets. But these same buyers can benefit from the potentially higher investment return that comes from taking on some amount of market investment risk. I also want to make it clear that most of the insurance agents who sell variable annuities are honest and responsible professionals who make sure the product is appropriate to the needs of the buyer. But unfortunately, there are some agents who, with the incentive of high first-year commissions, sell variable annuities to elderly buyers for whom they are not appropriate, or who move them in and out of multiple products to capture multiple commissions. Senate Bill 257 would give protection to these buyers by recognizing under state law what federal law already recognizes. Variable annuities are an investment. They are not just insurance. The people who sell an investment should be subject to the obligations and to the consequences of misconduct that apply to other investments. That's what the securities laws are all about. Senate Bill 257 aligns Oregon law with the reality of how these products are designed and marketed. I urge an adoption of the committee report on Senate Bill 257.
Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Speaker, I move the minority report on SB 257 be submitted for the committee report.
Representative Wisnett moves that the minority report on Senate Bill 257B be substituted for the committee report. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, I'd ask for your attention. Let's do the right thing today. Let's listen and vote the right way. I'll be brief because this is an easy vote. Just as easy as the Blazers' selection of Greg Odom for its NBA selection. We hope they do not make another Michael Jordan decision. Likewise, I hope you'll make the right selection on SB 257 for the minority report. Let me tell you about this bill. The committee report places variable annuities completely under ORS Chapter 59 for Oregon securities law, in addition to keeping them under ORS Chapter 731, Oregon insurance law, and other insurance statutes and rules, which would mean that variable annuities have four levels of regulation. That's like having four wives, right? They would be under Securities, Exchange Commission, the National Association of Security Dealers, Oregon Insurance Division, and Oregon Security Division. Now, the Minority Report protects the consumer further by keeping variable annuities under insurance regulations, but the Minority Report adds that variable annuities would also come under ORS 59-137, which allows liability claims for fraud and deceit with respect to securities and security business. The Minority Report grants regulatory authority over broker-dealers who are security agents, but limits private rights of action against insurance agents and companies who are regulated under the insurance division. Colleagues, I'm going to give you three quick reasons to vote for the Minority Report. The Minority Report is a consensus agreement reached between the Department of Consumer and Business Services and the insurance industry. I obtained this consensus agreement, but the committee was not allowed to carry the bill over to discuss my consensus amendment. Second, the Department of Business Services reported the director that she did not introduce this bill. It was not a priority issue for the department. What I believe the director is indicating is two things. First, the number of complaints about variable annuities was insignificant. And two, the current DSBS oversight of variable annuities is significant to protect the consumer. Let me explain. 99.66% of the variable annuities issued in the United States were sold without complaint, according to the SEC. Oversight of this industry is significant by state and federal agencies. Oregon's Consumer and Business Service Director reported to the committee that both securities and insurance are regulated with the same goal of consumer protection. The third reason to support the Minority Report is the consumer is protected by existing regulations and our Minority Report. Without separating variable annuities from insurance and requiring double oversight as an insurance and a security, creating another layer of bureaucracy and state employees does not protect the consumer. Maybe it will help the trial lawyers who seem to be doing okay. SB 257 is a solution in search of a problem, and the bureaucracy it creates will likely lead to consumer confusion and an increase in product costs for Oregon consumers. Colleague, listen to this. Even the trial lawyers who brought us this bill stated they don't need the bill. They have existing tools to protect the customers. You have an article on your desk today, colleagues, that talks about a person that had a bad agent. Our Minority Report calls for punishing bad agents. They can be punished under this. Colleagues, in summary, please vote for the Minority Report, which is first a consensus agreement between the insurance industry and Department of Consumer and Business Service Department. Second, there are not significant complaints to justifying requiring this product to be under both insurance and security review. And third, the current system and the Minority Report well protects the consumers. Please do not select Sam Bowie, but select Greg Odom and vote yes for this Minority Report.
Further discussion on the motion to substitute, Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was another player who was in the mix back when Sam Bowie was chosen by the Blazers. A young fellow named Jordan, and I think a lot of us wish that he had been selected that time. It might have been quite a different history in the Portland franchise. I think that the vote adopting the the committee version of this bill will be the selection of the all-around player who's going to really strengthen the franchise. I am speaking in opposition to the substitution motion. The only difference between it and the committee-passed version of Senate Bill 257 is that the minority report includes a Section 4 prohibiting an action or suit under existing provisions of Oregon's securities laws. In other words, the minority report version of the bill would add variable annuities to the authority of DCBS, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, to regulate securities, but it would not allow lawsuits by annuity purchasers who suffer harm. The minority report is good as far as it goes. The director of DCBS appeared in our House Judiciary Committee a couple of times to support Senate Bill 257. It was not a bill, as the maker of the motion pointed out, that DCBS had brought forward themselves, but when they saw it and saw its significance, they were strongly in support and came out to present at our committee meetings in support of the bill. But the minority report version does not go far enough because it doesn't allow the buyer of a variable annuity to recover losses suffered when it's improperly sold. Now, DCBS, just to be careful about this, they have not commented on the minority report. They have no position on it because the bill, with or without the minority report, expands their regulatory authority to include variable annuities, which is what they're concerned with. So they have no position on whether there should be private rights of action created. It was stated that the trial lawyers have admitted they don't need this bill, and it is true that trial lawyers who appeared in our committee said that they have remedies under federal law that they can pursue under, but they see it as important to the consumer to have this bill, not for them because they could manage carry lawsuits on other bases, but because there are certain opportunities for Oregon consumers to recover in Oregon courts that will be created by the committee version of this bill. To pass the minority report would be an incomplete remedy for Oregon consumers. Let me use an analogy. Imagine that you're driving and that you're T-boned at an intersection by someone who runs a red light, and you suffer serious injuries. Adopting the minority report on Senate Bill 257 would be like saying the only thing that can happen to the other driver is a traffic ticket from the officer who is called to the scene. You can't recover the loss you suffered. It doesn't make you whole. Let's reject this substitution motion and adopt the main version of Senate Bill 257 because it's the complete response to the need. It's the Michael Jordan for a variable annuity legislation this year. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Wisnett, do you wish to close on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Honorable colleagues, listen. Look at the amendment you have, the minority report. It says that these agents are liable in connection with violations of ORS 59-135, damages, defense attorney fees, limitations on proceedings if there's fraud or deceit involved. How many regulatory agencies do you want to have them under? So if we pass this bill, does that mean they get to come out from under insurance? Let's put them under every reporting or monitoring agency. They're under insurance. They're being monitored. The people are being protected. There's no significant number of complaints. If I thought there was, I would not be supporting this minority report. We do not need to put them under further monitoring. Please support the minority report. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that the minority report on Senate Bill 257 should be substituted for the committee report will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. All members have voted. The motion to substitute the minority report for the committee report on Senate Bill 257, not having received the required majority, is declared failed. Is there further discussion on the committee report? Seeing none, Representative, let's see.
This goes back to Greg, right?
Oh. Representative Cameron is now in the queue. We'll turn to you.
I'll wait for the debate on the bill, sir.
Very good. Representative McPherson, do you wish to close on the motion to adopt the committee report? He does not. Those of the opinion the committee report should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Esquivel just voted. So all have voted. The motion to adopt the committee report having the required majority is declared adopted. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that Senate Bill 257A be read third time for final consideration immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance the order of business of third reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 257 relating to variable annuities.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 257. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, you've already heard in the discussion of the committee report what this bill is about and the need for it. I want to draw your attention to a floor letter that was distributed, I think, maybe a day or two ago from the AARP. And it's headed, AARP supports Senate Bill 257. And the point that it makes in this letter and support for this bill is something that I think is good to understand about how we deliver retirement income in this country today. It used to be that we had a lot of pension plans so that people could, from their employment, receive the guarantee of a lifetime income. And to a large extent, the defined benefit pension plan that guaranteed people an income for life has disappeared. We've gone in a major trend toward defined contribution plans, including the 401k plan, in which people build up an account balance. Well, the risk with that kind of retirement plan is that you can outlive your money. Your money won't last as long as you live. So it is a very important opportunity for people to be able to take a lump sum amount that comes out of a retirement account and use it to buy an annuity that will guarantee them a lifetime income. But the traditional fixed annuity is based on a very low assumed rate of return because it's invested in bonds and things that have very little risk to them, but also little upside opportunity. What the variable annuity does is it combines the assurance of a lifetime income with the opportunity to get a stronger investment return and a better retirement. So it's a very important element in today's retirement planning to have variable annuities available, but it also involves taking investment risk. And that's where the securities laws come into play. They are the system of protections that we have for purchasers of investment products so that they are properly disclosed and so that they are not taken advantage of by unscrupulous people who are selling them inappropriate products or overpriced products. What the AARP recognizes is that our seniors today need the protection of the securities laws when they're buying variable annuities, when they're achieving that conversion of an account.
Colleagues, there are a lot of conversations on the floor. Maybe I could ask for folks to take those out into the lobby and give Representative McPherson your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. so that when they convert their retirement account into a lifetime income, it's done in a way that looks after their interests and gives them remedies if they're harmed. That's what Senate Bill 257 does. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Were there any examples of specific problems presented in testimony in our committee?
We heard reports that there have been a number of complaints. The number that sticks in my mind is 60 complaints that have been made about the sale of variable annuities in a several-year period here in Oregon.
Follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up question, is carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier yields.
Did we hear any specific testimony of any complaints? Specifically about the specifics of those complaints?
We did not hear from specific individuals who had been harmed. We heard a description of the level of complaint that had been experienced as a result of the sale of these products.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise today in opposition of this bill. It's unfortunate we didn't adopt the minority report, but this is another one of those bills that is a solution looking for a problem. As we heard the carrier say, we heard a few generalities about complaints, and to be specific about those complaints, there was, in a five-year period in Oregon, 40,000 policies sold. I'm going to say that again because some people aren't listening. 40,000 policies sold in a five-year period. Approximately 60 complaints were filed. Of those complaints, 43 enforcement actions in Oregon involving any product initiated by NASD against persons based in Oregon. Only 5 of these actions related to annuity sales. Only 3 of the enforcement actions related to a suitability issue. Only 1 of the 43 actions. 1 of the 43 actions since 2000 related to the suitability of a variable annuity. We got a problem. A problem is this building. Colleagues, quote, Corey Streisinger, in committee, this is not a priority. I urge your no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today in support of Senate Bill 257A, which will make variable annuities securities under state law. Colleagues, these are sold as securities. They're in an insurance wrapper, but they have the risks of securities. I put a floor letter on your desk today. Just this week's issue of Newsweek is reprinted in the Oregonian. Looking for income, safety, and growth? You're a sitting duck for a broker selling a fancy new investment product, a variable annuity. Colleagues, we did receive in testimony in the committee a letter submitted by somebody who testified. These people weren't here personally, but they did submit a letter of small business owners who said that they are owners of a small development property management company. Their investment advisor led them to believe that they were investing in standard mutual funds. In fact, were sold variable annuity products. We believe these products should be called what they are, securities. I do urge your support of this bill. And one more thing I wanted to add is that the attorneys who came and testified and brought us this testimony and talked about the growth of these products mentioned that they don't stand to benefit much from this change because many of these, if not most of these cases, are resolved in arbitration, and many of those settle. They're not in this for the attorney's fees. They're in this for the consumer protection that purchasers of these variable annuities deserve. I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
He said he would vote. Question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Good representative from Lake Oswego. Did your committee consider an amendment to this bill that would have still assured consumer protection and the ability to try fraud and deceit?
Representative, I'm not sure just what it is you're referring to. We didn't. This bill was not amended in our committee, and I actually don't recall what amendments were offered at the time.
Another question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, good representative. I'm speaking the fact that I think were you advised that there could be a consensus agreement that was reached, a consensus amendment reached on this bill?
What my colleague, the representative from rural Deschutes County, my good friend did, and it was, and I want to thank him again for having come to me before the minority report was filed to see whether there would be a consensus around using the minority report as the committee bill. And I do appreciate him bringing that to me. I looked at the issue, thought about it, and concluded that without the remedies that the Section 4 of what became the Minority Report would take away, that it really wouldn't be a sufficient bill to do the job.
Another question of the carrier, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
Thank you for the response, good representative from Lake Oswego. In your opening comments to this body today, you did state that variable annuities are insurance. Would you confirm that statement, sir?
Yes, colleague. They are insurance combined with an investment, and that's what makes them a particularly useful product, because the insurance element is it guarantees a lifetime income, but the investment element makes it variable up and down depending on how well the investments do. But clearly there is an insurance component and there is an investment component.
Another question to carry, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question. Is carry you?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, good representative from Lake Oswego. I've got to learn to phrase my questions better as a lawyer, so I just get a yes or no. So this insurance product that we're now with this bill will make an insurance product and a securities product. Would you support legislation next session to eliminate it from oversight as an insurance product?
No.
Another follow-on question to the carrier.
Additional question. Is carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
Well, good representative in Lake Oswego, I don't understand. I'm for consumers' protection 100%, but how, you know, where's the line? How much protection and how much oversight and how much bureaucracy is this bill going to produce for the taxpayers of Oregon?
Well, happily, we learned in our committee that it won't produce any additional bureaucracy. In fact, we asked the director of DCBS whether it would require any additional staffing, and her response was no, because in Oregon, the insurance regulatory function is done in the same agency as the securities regulatory function. So it's the same people. And the only effect of this bill from their standpoint is it gives them some extra tools to deal with problems in the marketplace that the same people who are already regulating this product can exercise.
Thank you, good representative. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, listen. We're not going to have any more people oversight, providing oversight. We just said that. Right now, our department is reviewing these cases. We just heard they're not going to produce any more people to provide this oversight. They're providing oversight. Bad people are being punished. We do not need another agency or more oversight. Thank you.
For the discussion, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
Good representative, when the director was in testifying, she had mentioned that they had adopted new suitability rules as to whether they're sold or not, and they looked at these violations and they adopted new rules to take care of the problem within the division they're in now. Why would we need to, if it's in the same agency and the same people, and they had the opportunity to do administrative rules, and they've told us they've done administrative rules, then why do we need to change this?
I'd like to thank my good friend from Southwestern Oregon for that question. It is true that there are suitability standards for the sale of this product under the insurance regulatory authority that DCFBS has that have already been put in place. But what the director had concluded was that classifying them as securities in addition to insurance would give her some additional tools for how they could enforce against inappropriate sales that do not exist already. So they have some tools already. What this bill does is it just adds some additional tools.
Additional question, carrier?
Additional question to the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
They have the authority to impose penalties. So I'd like to know what penalties has the Department of Consumer and Business imposed on those people who they have found in violation now of improperly selling annuities?
We did not get detail from DCBS about what the specific nature of the penalties are that they have available under insurance law as opposed to securities law. There are certain authorities that they have in under each area, and what they want to do is to have the securities remedies or authorities available to them in addition because of the investment nature of these products.
One further question, please.
Additional question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I do.
Carrier does.
We've heard how there was something like 60 violations out of 40,000, and I would suggest it's probably less. As I mentioned to you in committee, there's probably more complaints against attorneys on the same number of cases than there was against people who missold these, and everybody agreed to that. But going from that, do you know if there was ever more than one action taken against an individual who sold these annuities improperly? In other words, if they cited the person, found something in error, that by citing them once it corrected it, and they did not continue to do that?
Representative, we heard that there were 60 complaints, and I didn't trace through, and I don't recall that we heard in committee about how each of those complaints through that several-year period had been disposed of. Presumably, some of them were resolved with just telling the maybe some of them were without merit. Maybe some others were addressed by getting the person being complained of to change their conduct going forward. I can't tell you how each of those complaints was disposed of.
Okay. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as you've heard from the lack of a real definitive answer, the department never came through and ever really disclosed to us specifically what those complaints were that were causing the problem to the degree that would warrant this bill. With the new rules that they've got in place about this and the oversight of four different processes already, this bill really isn't needed.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, back in the early 90s, I was approached and was trying to work out some kind of an annuity for retirement, additional to my retirement. And as part of that, I was going to have to cash in some life insurance policies. part of the law is that the life insurance companies are notified about why you want to cash them in. They have a chance to take a second shot at you to keep your business. So my insurance agent company, Prudential, said, oh, we can not only match that, we can beat it. Lower cost, give you a nice life insurance policy, which I needed, which I felt I needed to for my wife should she live longer than me. So I invested in that and paid, at their directions, a certain amount a month, every month. And once a year, I'd get a bill from Prudential saying you owe $2,000. I'd call up the agent, and he'd say, oh, don't worry about that. It's computer-generated. Throw that away. Keep sending in your money. And I did that. And finally, at about the 10th anniversary, I got a call from back east early one morning saying, we're canceling your policy because you haven't been making payments. And I said, what are you talking about? Well, anyway, long story short, I hadn't been paying enough, which the agent lied to me, the manager lied to me about it, and lied for 10 years. So I asked Prudential for my money back, and they told me, essentially, go pound sand. So I cashed out my cash value, which was a little bit, just thought, well, I got screwed by the big guy, and I'll just take that. And then I got angrier about it and ended up hiring an attorney. And Prudential, who said, we have done absolutely nothing wrong, but what we're going to do now that you've hired an attorney is we'll give you back every penny you've paid in for the past 10 years. And they gave me back my money. And so that made me somewhat whole. But I don't have that insurance policy that I thought I had, that I based the way I selected my retirement out of the police bureau, based on the fact that I'd have this additional piece to support my wife should I die. I took a bigger outgoing salary because I had this coverage. I don't have that coverage now. And that agent is still working, and that manager is still working, despite complaints to the insurance division. We need this bill so that other people will not get screwed by the big guys like Prudential Insurance Company. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Is the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Will this new securities law protect those people who are contacted online or that choose to go to Washington where there are less regulation than there will be in Oregon, or in Idaho where there's less regulation than in Oregon, or in California or Nevada where there's less regulation than in Oregon?
Representative, there's a premise in your question that I cannot confirm. That is the statement that there is less regulation in each of those other states than there is in Oregon. And so I would have to say, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. We did not hear about how this question is resolved in each of those neighboring states. What happens in Oregon is that any security that is offered, any insurance products offered, and what we're dealing with here is something that really is both, has to comply with Oregon securities laws to be offered in Oregon. And anybody who is offered that product in Oregon is protected by Oregon law. Now, if people travel elsewhere to make a purchase elsewhere out of state, then they are subject to whatever protections those states might give them. But in Oregon, I think Oregonians should be protected when they purchase variable annuities.
Follow-up question?
Additional question. Is Gary yield?
I do.
He does.
So if Oregonians choose to buy this product online from any out-of-state supplier, they will not receive this additional protection that you're trying to afford to them today.
I beg your pardon, Representative. Could you repeat the question for me?
So if Oregonians choose to go online to buy this product from an out-of-state supplier who is not coming to Oregon to supply it, I want to go ahead and e-transfer money on a monthly basis or an annual basis to buy an out-of-state product, does this protect Oregonians in the global economy that we're talking about today?
Representative, we didn't get any input in our committee about how online sales are affected by regulations we put in effect in Oregon, and whether a person has to physically go to another state, to Idaho, to make a purchase, to be outside of the protections of Oregon law, or whether they sit at their home computer and contact somebody by email and to make a purchase, somebody who's in Idaho, whether they would be outside of Oregon's protections. We didn't get any input on that.
So final question in this regard.
Additional question. Does Kerry yield?
I do.
He
so
does.
Ignored the global economy then for this kind of a product.
Representative, I suppose that question would then deal with everything we do in this building that regulates commerce and provides protections for consumers. That is, if we can't get at global transaction of business, then we're ignoring the global economy. Something I would emphasize that I had mentioned earlier is federal law treats variable annuities as securities. What we're doing here is aligning Oregon law with federal law so that Oregonians going into an Oregon courthouse to get a remedy or contacting an Oregon official in Salem can proceed on a variable annuity knowing that they're treated as securities as they are by the federal government.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I was at every meeting, I think, on this bill, and I don't ever remember us discussing that this bill would match us up to federal law. We were even told that federal law describes variable annuities as insurance. I may be wrong, but I do not remember that in my committee meeting, colleagues. We're never brought up that we're aligning with federal regulation. We were told that federal law the federal level, that these are identified as insurance.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During the debate, colleagues, I had a conversation with even one of my colleagues here on the floor who wasn't really clear on what we were voting on here. And I think if any of us here have made investments in our life, especially in the last 10 or 15 years, if you've invested in the stock market, you've probably looked at your statement and see it go down from month to month. There's a letter the good representative from Beaverton put on your desk. Quote, guaranteed minimum withdrawal benefits for life. You put up some money, it's invested in stocks and bonds, you're guaranteed. You go buy a stock, you're not guaranteed anything. I've lost money in the stock market, I'm sure a few of us have, but this guarantees a payment of 5 or 6% of your initial investment for life. This is not a whole life insurance policy. This is an investment where I'm guaranteed a payment back. And we've heard testimony today of very, very small problems. And those problems are dealt with those agents that are problems. This is a bill that does not need to pass this floor today.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative McPherson, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker. Let's just clarify a few things here. First, let's focus on what is the status of this product as insurance or securities. Well, it is insurance because it provides a guarantee of a lifetime income. It is also an investment product because the amount you receive can go up or down depending on how well the underlying investments, usually mutual funds, perform. So it is both insurance and an investment. In recognition of that investment element, the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission has classified variable annuities as a security. So the federal law is they are treated as a security, and what we would be doing in Senate Bill 257 is aligning state law with federal law. Now, the point has been made here several times that there is a low level of complaint about this product. And it is true that there are not a lot, high volume of complaints for the number of items sold. But in those cases where there is a problem, and I would say readily, we did not hear that there was a high proportion of complaint, but there are some instances where this product is not being properly sold. And why don't we create the tools so that our regulators at DCBS and the injured parties can exercise the remedies that would be available to them for any other investment product. If they go and buy a mutual fund across the counter at their broker or down at the office of that mutual fund house, they are protected by the securities laws. But if they buy those same mutual funds wrapped inside a variable annuity, the position taken is that they are not a security. Either way, they are subject to the risks, up or down, of what happens on that on those mutual funds, and are at risk if they are not a suitable product or if it underperforms. So they need the protections that are being created by this bill. I would just draw your attention once again to the floor letter you have from the AARP, which has identified that this is a significant issue for its members in not having the full range of protections they should in being able to access a guaranteed income for life that has an investment return element to it. So I would say we should have to choose today, do we stand with our seniors who need this protection, or would you stand with that relatively small number of bad actors who sell insurance products and don't sell them in the right way? Most people who sell insurance do a great job. They are very responsible players. But why don't we create the tools to go after those few people who aren't doing it right by passing this bill? So I urge an aye vote on Senate Bill 257. And, Mr. Speaker, I request a call of the House.
Representative McPherson requests a call of the House. He is joined in that request by Representative Gilman, Representative Bonamici, Representative Comp, Representative Smith, and Representative Barker. Doorkeepers will bar the doors. Sergeant of Arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker. Barnhart. Berger. Berger Beyer. Bonamici. Boone. Boquist. Boquist Bruin. Bruin Buckley. Burley. Burley Butler. Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gilzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Conk, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Olson Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, not answering, Bruin, Burley, Olson, excuse, not subject to the call, Flores, Greenlick, Hannah, Minnis, Patty Smith, Thatcher.
All members are present. Those of opinion that Senate Bill 257A should pass, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? She votes no. Representative Scott? Representative Scott, how do you vote? He votes no. Representative Lim, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative McPherson, for what purpose do your ayes?
Mr. Speaker, I change my vote from aye to nay and serve notice of possible reconsideration.
Representative McPherson changes his vote from aye to nay and serves notice of possible reconsideration. Senate Bill 257A, having failed to receive a constitutional majority, is declared failed.
The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Bill 5533 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Wednesday, May 30th, 2007 calendar. House will stand at ease. Members, let me restate. The chair requests unanimous consent that consideration of Senate Bill 5533 be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Tuesday, May 29th, 2007 calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3557 relating to land reclamation. House Bill 3558 relating to health, appropriating money and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority and providing that this act shall be referred to the people for their approval or rejection.
Bills read first time or passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 59 relating to insurance coverage for acupuncture services. Reenact requirement repealed under automatic repeal provision pertaining to mandated health insurance coverage.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer votes aye. Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 59A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 277 relating to juveniles replaces references to child with references to ward and provisions relating to persons under jurisdiction of juvenile court.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Jensen, Representative Wisnett votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 277A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill and a short summary.
Senate Bill 751, relating to podiatric physician and surgeon member of Board of Medical Examiners, authorizes podiatric physician and surgeon member of Board of Medical Examiners to vote on all matters before board.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Merkley excused for House business. And Representative Nolan excused for business of the House. Senate Bill 751, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. Representative Olson, the clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2369 related to emergency communication taxes and providing for revenue raising requires approval by a three-fifths majority.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2369. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2369 is the 911 75-cent telephone tax. And House Bill 2369 is a pretty simple bill. It extends the sunset to 2014 for public safety answering points, otherwise known as PSAPs, or your 911 centers, to continue to receive the 75-cent tax from subscribers who have telecommunication services, which includes cellular, wireless, and other radio common carriers. Oregon is one of the front runners in the nation in combining technology in response to 911 callers. Now, let me stop there sharing about the bill, but let me share now with you a little bit about what your 911 centers have been doing for you around the state. Regarding the mapping program, Oregon is one of the first states to implement a statewide mapping system in each of our 50 PSAPs, the public safety answering points again. These geographic information systems, mapping systems, allow 911 call takers to see the calling party on a map on their screen. The Federal Communications Commission mandated that wireless carriers provide location coordinates to PSAPs in an effort to assist in locating wireless callers. As service providers implement this technology, Oregon's PSAPs are already doing that and receive it. This program is being used as a model for other states and multi-county jurisdictions across the nation. Oregon is truly a leader in 911 community. But let me go a little further, share with you, too, what the call volume is that we're looking at across the state. In 2004, there were 2.1 million calls that were received in your 911 centers. In December, or in 2005, that increased to 2.2, and last year there was 2.8 million calls. And here's some food for thought for you. Your 911 centers are becoming more effective and more efficient in Oregon. One of the stints that I did when I was with the state police, I spent 3.5 years in communications, and I was deeply involved in the early 90s with the 911 centers and Oregon Emergency Management to do a review from what the legislature had directed back then for the 911 efficiency study. Today you have 50 primary answering points throughout the state, down from 60. So they are becoming more efficient, more effective. And another thought for you, since 1980, the state has added another 1 million people to its population. So when you add those two things together, I really do believe that your 911 centers are doing a good job and they deserve an I-vote.
Further discussion? Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. 911 is a great program. I support it in most of my district, but in Jackson County, there are two call centers right across the street from each other. And until that duplication goes away, I will be a no vote on any 911 funding.
Further discussion? Representative Olson, do you wish to close? Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk. And colleagues, this requires a 3/5 majority. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Votes aye. And Representative Scott, how do you vote? Votes no. House Bill 2369, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the memorial.
SJM 12, urging Congress to amend No Child Left Behind Act of 2001 to provide for a waiver and adequate federal funding.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of Senate Joint Memorial 8. I'm sorry, Senate Joint Memorial 12A. Representative Dellum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. SJM 12 came out of the Subcommittee in Education for Innovation with a 5-3 vote with some recommendation for amendments added. It was then brought across the desk of the full Education Committee and came out of the full Education Committee 6-0 with 3 excused. I think it's as important that we talk about what the bill is not as that we talk about what the bill is. It is not a statement on No Child Left Behind. It's not a statement on the federal interpretation of their involvement in education. It's not a statement on the difficulty with meeting the standards. And it's definitely not a statement about the high standards that have been set. What this memorial does is say to the federal government, if you mandate, please pay. And if you will, please provide us some flexibility in Oregon to implement the law as fits Oregon. I'd appreciate your support on the memorial. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Dellum, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye.
Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Brune, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Kremel, how do you vote? Votes no. Representative Dellum, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Joint Memorial 12A, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. The clerk will read the next resolution.
SGR 19, declaring state a policy related to Internet Protocol Network.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of Senate Joint Resolution 19. Representative Dellum.
Yes, Madam Speaker. Senate Joint Resolution 19 was sponsored by myself and several senators in a conversation during the interim. The bill was submitted, was heard by my colleague, Representative Riley's committee on information management technology. The memorial simply says that state policy will be to keep up the Internet infrastructure performance and connectivity so that it is current to meet the needs of business, education, government, and individual users. This is good state policy. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, or to the resolution.
To the resolution.
Colleagues, there's a couple of reasons this is an important bill. One is economic development. This sets a policy that the state encourages the companies who provide this technology to work in this state, to form companies to work on this technology. The other reason is currently we have no Tier 1 protocol center in this state. So those packets of information that you create on your computer and send out on the Internet go at least to Seattle and back. This increases the possibility that they're lost or stolen. We'd like to have that technology in our state to create a Tier 1 packet transfer station here in the state so that our data isn't sent out of the state if its destination is here in the state. So I urge your passage of this bill.
Further discussion? Representative Dellum, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Burley, how do you vote? votes aye. Senate Joint Resolution 19, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 443 related to electric utilities appropriated money and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 460 relating to gift cards. Senate Bill 819 relating to surplus refund methods and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 1049 relating to civil penalties imposed by Board of Boiler Rules.
Bills read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5529 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Health and Science University appropriated money declared an emergency. Senate Bill 188 relating to rural health service program. Senate Bill 193 relating to systems subject to Board of Boiler Rules regulation and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 239 related to regulation of use of real property and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 364 related to persons receiving mental health services. Senate Bill 822 related to veterans' preferences and declared an emergency. Senate Bill 872 related to judges' retirement and declared an emergency.
Bills read second time were passed to third reading. Third reading of Senate bill. The chair requests consent that SB 306 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Tuesday, May 29th, 2007 calendar. The carrier is excused. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 592 relating to credit unions.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 592A. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I bring you Senate Bill 592A, which comes to you from the House Committee on Business and Labor. Senate Bill 592A is the annual technical cleanup bill that comes to us every session from the Credit Union Association of Oregon, and it's the work of credit unions throughout the state who each year review and make recommendations for changes to the ORS 723 chapter of the Oregon Credit Union Act. The bill makes several technical changes. The most significant ones are it eliminates a branch application fee to give the Department of Consumer and Business Services more flexibility in working with credit unions to establish the fee. It allows for state-chartered credit unions to sell a variety of money transfer instruments, including cashier's checks, traveler's checks, and money orders to non-members. This is a new power which is allowed for federally chartered credit unions. So this change would provide a level playing field with federally chartered credit unions. The bill limits fees charged for check cashing consistent with pending legislation in the House in House Bill 2202. Credit unions have a unique opportunity to support those who do not have a bank or any institution to do their banking, so this change will allow consumers more access to financial services. It also allows for low-income charter designations, something that is also allowed at the federal level in 31 other states. And finally, it makes additional technical changes too numerous to mention. The bill passed unanimously in the Senate. It also had a unanimous vote from our House Committee on Business and Labor, and I would urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close? Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. And the clerk will please open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Representative Bruin votes aye. And Representative Olson is off the floor. Senate Bill 592A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 596 relating to emerging small business enterprises.
The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 596. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise to bring Senate Bill 596 to the floor from the Business and Labor Committee, where it received a unanimous do-pass recommendation. Senate Bill 596 is about the Emerging Small Business Program, which was established within ODOT to provide opportunities for small business. The program is funded through a special account within the State Highway Fund, paid for with revenue generated from a 1% charge against each public improvement highway construction contract awarded by ODOT. Senate Bill 596 simply increases the contract amount that can be set aside for exclusive bidding by certified emerging small business enterprises when contracting with ODOT from the emerging small business account from $50,000 to $100,000. This is going to help our emerging small businesses. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just want to take a moment and put a little bug in your ear. The emerging small business account is a fabulous tool to assist small business owners in getting through the front door of doing business with the state of Oregon. The Oregon Department of Transportation has stepped up and has played a pivotal role in taking what was once an experiment and making it into a successful program. Here's where I want to put a bug in your ear. At some point in time, we ought to take this little program and ask more agencies to participate in it other than the Department of Transportation. There's an opportunity for the Department of Administrative Services, an opportunity for Housing and Community Services, an opportunity for our Department of Human Services, all those different agencies to step up and to allow small business owners an opportunity to contract with the state of Oregon. This is a great program. I compliment Senator Gordley on bringing this forward. In the future, let's take a look and see if there's another way to help small businesses, and that is by letting them contract with all of our state agencies. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holby, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just briefly, I want to thank the good representative from the land of food and shelter for putting that bug in my ear. I can hear it already. Thank you.
Thank you, too. Okay, those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will vote aye, and those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin votes aye. Oh. Thank you, Representative. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Tomei, how do you vote? Votes aye. Senate Bill 596, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 734, related to insurance of stock in certain financial institutions.
The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 734A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to ask you to join me in supporting Senate Bill 734. This bill comes to the House floor on a unanimous vote of the House Business and Labor Committee. Senate Bill 734 allows banks that do not utilize a bank holding company organizational structure to offer stock grants as a form of compensation to the bank's directors, officers, and employees. Currently, banks with holding companies can offer this type of compensation. However, the smaller, younger banks, which typically are not organized under the holding company structure, are not allowed to give stock grants as compensation. Senate Bill 734 allows levels the playing field for these smaller banks without holding companies and provides them with a method to compensate their employees in a manner comparable to the way that the larger banks with holding companies can compensate their employees. The Oregon Bankers Association, who requested 734, worked with the Department of Consumer and Business Services to create this bill. DCBS does not object to this bill. By passing Senate Bill 734, we will level the playing field for the smaller, younger banks that are not associated with a holding company. I do urge your yes vote on this.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. Thank you. Madam Speaker, I would like to let my Christmas tree colleague know that it's a good bill and it should pass.
Thank you, Representative. For those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed, will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will now open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Representative Gilzer, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin votes aye. Senate Bill 734A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 73, relating to payment for collection of signatures on election documents.
Question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of SB 73. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 73, which comes to you from your Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. This bill is really quite simple. It applies the current constitutional prohibition on paying by the signature for initiative petitions to those who collect voter registration cards or collect signatures on nominating petitions. The bill was introduced at the request of the Secretary of State, and in our committee we had testimony of several reasons why this bill is needed. One was evidence of people collecting voter registrations and then discarding them in some cases so that people thought they were registered and yet the registrations hadn't been turned in, or in other cases, people collecting duplicate voter registrations for people that were already registered, and then the county clerks having to unnecessarily process and weed out those registrations. So the bill does not prohibit paying people to register voters or collect nominating signatures. It simply says they can't be paid a bounty on the per signature basis. Voters overwhelmingly said they wanted that prohibition in the Constitution when they passed ballot measure 26 in 2002. This would apply the same standard to voter registration. And I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 73.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Rosenbaum, do you wish to close? Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Burley, how do you vote? Burley votes aye. Representative Glezio, how do you vote? Glezio votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? Crummell votes no. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Representative Richardson votes no. Senate Bill 7-3, having passed the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 173, relating to disclosure of tax information.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 173. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 173 comes to you from the House Revenue Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. Senate Bill 173 provides an additional tool to the Department of Revenue that will allow the department to more effectively find cases of abusive tax shelters and prevent issuance of fraudulent refunds. Under current law, the Department of Revenue generally cannot disclose confidential tax return information. One exception to this prohibition allows the department to disclose information to tax agencies in other states for compliance purposes. The other state must agree to maintain the confidentiality of the information and use it only for the purposes of tax compliance. The department has entered into agreements with the majority of states and is able to exchange information on that basis. In 1993, the Federation of Tax Administrators developed a uniform exchange agreement to facilitate the exchange of information among states. To date, the agreement has been signed by the District of Columbia, the City of New York, and every single state in the Union except for Nevada, New Mexico, and Oregon. Because of this, Oregon has not been able to participate fully in the agreement because our disclosure law does not allow the sharing of information with cities. This bill would remedy that problem. Senate Bill 173 allows the Department of Revenue to sign the agreement and exchange information with other states and the City of New York through the database rather than through individual exchange agreements with each and every state. The information is still protected by the receiving state and is used only for tax compliance. It's important to note that we spent significant time in committee talking about the strength of that confidentiality and the protection of the information. Using the uniform agreement, states have developed a database that contains information about taxpayers involved in abusive tax avoidance transactions. That information has been used by many states to contact taxpayers who filed amended returns in other states reporting such transactions. Senate Bill 173 will allow the department to participate fully in this database and enhance the state's efforts to identify abusive tax transactions. I encourage an aye vote on Senate Bill 173.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gelser, do you wish to close? Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will vote aye. Those opposed, nay. The clerk will open this voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Crummell, how do you vote? Crummell votes no. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes no. Senate Bill 173 receiving the constitutional majority is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 175, relating to tax penalties.
Question now arises upon a third and final reading of passage of Senate Bill 175. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 175 also comes to you from your House Revenue Committee with a unanimous vote. This bill will modify the timeline for demanding the filing of a return that is required to be filed more often than annually. Under current law, the Department of Revenue may demand a return or report and assess a penalty if a person does not file a required return or report within 3 months of the due date. Senate Bill 175 reduces the three-month period to 1 month for returns or reports that are due more often than once a year. Currently, the department may request a return or report if the department believes one is required. However, the statutory timelines prohibit the department from demanding a return or report until 3 months after the return or report is due. In addition, the department cannot demand payment of tax until another 2 months have passed after that notification. Senate Bill 175 shortens the timeline for programs that require more frequent filings. This change would allow earlier contact with taxpayers to help avoid additional late filing situations. Colleagues, this is an important streamlining bill for the Department of Revenue. It makes sense and deserves your aye vote. Please vote yes. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A question for the carrier.
Question of the carrier, does the carrier yield?
Yes, the carrier yields.
Thank you.
The carrier does.
Just on line 23-24 of the bill, there shall be added to the amount of a tax required to be shown on the report of failure a penalty fee of 20% of the amount of tax. So, and my question is that a 20%? Let's say somebody failed to file their quarterly report within the 30 days after, they could be assessed a 20% penalty. Is that accurate?
Thank you for that question. Yes, and that's actually the existing penalty. That is not a change. This just changes the amount of time that you have to wait before you provide notice that penalty will be assessed.
Okay, thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, I find it very interesting. If you look at a 20% penalty on a quarterly tax return and you annualize that, if somebody's late on their tax return, what is that? That's an 80% interest. How many bills have we passed out here that a private business cannot charge more than 36% annually? And yet we're going to pass a bill here allowing our state government to charge 80% to our citizens because they're late on taxes. It might be existing statute, but it's interesting we haven't gone after the Department of Revenue and the interest rates that they charge or are allowed to charge our citizens. I'll be a no vote in protest.
Further discussion. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question to the carrier?
Question to the carrier. Do you yield?
Yes, I would take a question.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Representative, has there been, or in the context of this bill during discussions in committee, was there any discussion about moving the Oregon Department of Revenue to a non-general fund agency?
No, we did not have that discussion about this bill.
Thank you. Further question?
Further question, do you yield?
One more, last question.
One more, Representative.
Ooh, only one more, huh? We must be needing to get to lunch. In the revenue impact statement, it shows that for the 07-08 and 08-09 and then the further bienniums out, that the revenue impact is minimal. Do we have an estimation or an amount, I guess, that we would note as being minimal?
I Generally, minimal is less than 50,000. What this really does is it creates a streamlined flow because it decreases the delay. This is not something, even with that penalty, because that's current law, that increases revenues. This really also is protecting the taxpayer because we're letting them know earlier that they have missed that payment, and this allows them to get caught up before they fall further behind.
I'm going to push the envelope. Further question?
Another question. Do you yield?
No. Thank you.
She does not.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm going to draw your attention to a couple of areas. On line 23 and 24 on page 1 of the bill, it says, there shall be added to the amount of tax required to be shown on the report or return a failure to file a penalty of 20% of the amount of the tax. That's new language. That's not existing statute. On page, at the bottom of page 1, starting on line 28, in the middle of the sentence there, it says, assess the tax with appropriate penalty, and continuing to the top of page 2, interest plus an additional penalty of 25% of the tax deficiency determined by the department, and give written notice to the determination and assessment to the person required to make the filing. That's not existing statute. That's new language. Now, it may be existing somewhere else, but it doesn't point to where in here that it is somewhere else. That is new language. And I have to agree with my colleague from South Salem. The other questions that I was going to ask is, aren't we, in fact, violating the laws that we just passed regarding loan companies? And shouldn't those laws apply to the state as well? And are we trying to make sure that we are higher than the credit card companies for a reason? The only reason that I can think of that we would want our interest rates and our penalties to be higher than the credit card companies is so that somebody would maybe use their credit card so that they would pay their tax so that the state would get the money sooner. I think it is baffling to me why, as a body, we would say we're going to limit what people can charge on interest rates and then turn around and pass a law that allows the state government to absolutely violate. You know, there's a lot of people out there that think they're getting screwed on their taxes to begin with. And then this just sort of throws a little salt in the wound or adds fuel to the fire or any other sort of way you may want to state this. But basically what it means is, you know what, we're screwing you once, but it's okay because we're going to just screw you again.
Further discussion? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does carrier yield?
I would yield to one question.
Carrier yields to one question.
Just one. Is the Department of Revenue a loan company, or is there any way of construing this as a loan?
The Department of Revenue is not a loan company. A tax is an obligation that a person owes to the state, and this is about meeting that obligation in a timely manner.
Further discussion? Seeing none, those who are... Oh, Representative Gelser, do you want to close?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to point out there were some questions about where this existed in current law. If you look in your bill file on page 1 in lines 12 to 13, that language is already there. There shall be added to the amount of tax required to be shown on the report or return a failure to file penalty of 20% of the amount of the tax. So this 20% penalty is not a new penalty. It's not an unusual penalty. It's not something that's added by this bill. It exists in law. This is a pay-as-you-go kind of a tax. This bill allows the Department of Revenue to be contacting taxpayers when they have missed a payment to allow them to catch up more quickly. In the end, this is going to help taxpayers not accumulate greater penalties. This is a good bill for the state. It's a good bill for taxpayers. It passed unanimously out of your House Revenue Committee, and it deserves your aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open up the voting system. Representative Burley votes aye. Representative Butler, how do you vote? Butler votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes aye. Senate Bill 175, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Tuesday, May 29, 2007, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Having none, so ordered. Other business of the House? Other business of the Senate? Orders of the day having been completed. Announcements. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to allow Representative Maurer to change his vote on Senate Bill 592. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Barnhart requests that... Oh, just a minute. Okay. Representative Barnhart asked that... Say it again, Ramona. That's all right. Representative Barnhart requests unanimous consent that Representative Maurer be able to change his vote on Senate Bill 592. There will be no... will not change the outcome of any objections. Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Maurer, how do you vote?
Aye.
Maurer votes aye. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request unanimous consent that Representative Wisnett be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 592. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Barnhart requests unanimous consent that Representative Wisnett be able to change his vote on Senate Bill 592. It will not change the outcome. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote?
Madam Chair, aye, thank you.
Representative Wisnett votes aye. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request unanimous consent that Representative Richardson be allowed to change his vote on Senate Bill 592. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Barnhart requests that Representative Richardson be allowed to change his vote. And I didn't. Senate Bill 592. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Richardson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Representative Richardson votes aye. Further announcements. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Dear representatives, as we sat here for 2 hours this morning, 30 little children were kidnapped in this United States of America. And they have now 3 hours, which is what is reported, in which they could be saved from abuse or death. Shouldn't we do everything possible that we can to find these children and bring them home to their families? Shouldn't the Senate be processing our House Bill 3176 that we passed unanimously to protect these children?
Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Gelzer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I rise today to share with you a story from my local newspaper on our opinion page, which is a nice reminder of when children can remind us about what it is to be selfless and generous, even at a very young age. The Gazette Times every Friday does a roses and raspberries column, and it leads this week with, "We hereby deliver roses to Martina Vega of Corvallis, whose thoughtful approach to celebrating her 9th birthday was a refreshing change from the more publicized birthday indulgences of the spoiled, self-centered young often featured on television. As her grandmother, Ruth Volk, informed us in a letter, Martina's mother was tucking her into bed one night when Martina announced that she wanted to make a change in her birthday party plans. Instead of gifts for her, she wanted to invite her friends to bring a gift of some kind of pet food. During her April party, her young guests enjoyed watching Martina unwrap cans and bags of food for cats, dogs, rabbits, and even horses. All were donated to the Heartland Humane Society, where 9-year-old Martina is a volunteer. We're glad this imaginative young woman, who is the daughter of Robin and Jose Vega, found a way to include all of her friends in her birthday celebration, human and otherwise. Now that's real diversity in action. So my hat's off to Martina and the many other young people who demonstrate such acts of kindness and generosity every day, and I look forward to continue working with all of you to support these children in every way through the rest of this legislative session. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. On May 15th, all school districts in the state expected to receive or have adjusted the final payment for the previous fiscal year, in this case, 05-06. This expectation is a statutory expectation of payment. In ORS 327.101, it states, the adjustment shall be made to the May 15th apportionment to the district. This year, the Department of Education failed to provide that adjustment to local school districts. In the case of Grants Pass School District Number 7, that failed payment equals $700,000. This is money that my district is owed. This is money that is not going into the classroom. This is money that is not going to reduce class size. And this is money that the state is earning interest on at the expense of the kids, including my own 4 children. Now, I'm not going to blame the department for this accounting nightmare, and I applaud their effort for making changes going forward, but the fact remains that we cannot go backwards and correct that error. School districts anticipating these payments are placed in an unacceptable cash flow and budgetary position. We have to figure out where the buck stops. When I took my oath, I thought the buck stopped here, but I guess I was wrong. It apparently stops in the classroom.
Further remonstrances? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Dear colleagues, I hope you have a safe, enjoyable weekend. But let's not forget that the holiday that we're celebrating and having the day off is Memorial Day. I've had the honor of visiting many military cemeteries around the world, including Arlington on many occasions. It's a beautiful sight, but it's also a sad location. But we should always remember this is Memorial Day in memory of those who gave the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Galizio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just wanted to encourage, or I should say point out to the representative from Josephine County that help is on the way. Yesterday, your education subcommittee and the joint ways and means process passed out 2 important budgets. One, the Department of Education, which it included $39 million more dollars for Oregon Pre-K or Head Start. And we passed out at the earliest point in a long time, a $6.245 billion K-12 budget yesterday, and you'll have the chance to vote for it on the floor, and I hope you and others will do that. So help is on the way.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 29, 2007.
Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 29, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourned until 10 a.m. Tuesday, May 29, 2007. Without objection, the House is adjourned.